An Osho Talk. When the Shoe Fits. Talks on the stories of Trunk-Dazoo, number 10.
Trunk-Dazoo says, fishes are born in water, man is born in Tao. If fishes, born in water, seek the deep shadow of pond and pool, all their needs are satisfied. If man, born in Tao, sinks into the deep shadow of non-action, to forget aggression and concern, he lacks nothing, and his life is secure.
Needs can be fulfilled, but desires cannot be. Desire is a need gone mad. Needs are simple. They come from nature. Desires are very complex, and they don't come from the nature. They are created by the mind. Needs are moment to moment. They are created out of life itself. Desires are not from moment to moment. They are always for the future. They are not created by life itself. They are projected by the mind. Desires are projections. They are not really needs. This is the first thing to be understood. The deeply you understand, the better. What is desire? It is movement of the mind in the future. Need belongs to this moment. You are hungry. It is a need. It has to be fulfilled. And it can be fulfilled. There is no problem about it. If you are thirsty, you are thirsty here and now. You have to seek water. It should be fulfilled. It is a life need. But desires are not like that. You desire to be the president of a country. It is not a need. It is ambition. It is ego projection in the future. Are you desire the heaven? That too is in the future. Are you desire God? That too is in the future. Remember that needs are always here and now. They are existential. And desires are never here and now. They are non-existential. They are just mental in the mind. And they cannot be fulfilled. Because their very nature is to move into the future. They are just like the horizon you see. It seems that just nearby somewhere, the earth meets the sky. It is so apparent. You can walk. But you can go on walking forever and ever. And the distance will remain the same. Always somewhere ahead, the earth will be meeting the sky. But you will never reach that place, that point where earth meets the sky. They never meet. This is just an appearance. This is what Hindus call Maya. It appears, but it is not so. It appears if you are standing at a distance. The nearer you come, the more you realize that it is not so. It goes on further ahead, and the distance between you and the horizon remains always the same. The distance between you and your desire remains always the same. How can you fulfill it? If you desire 10,000 rupees, you may get someday. But by the time you get them, the desire has gone 10 times ahead again. You had 1,000 rupees. The desire asks for 10,000. Now you have 10,000. The desire asks for 100,000. The distance remains the same. You may have 100,000. It will make no difference. 10 times again, the desire will remain the same. Needs are simple. They can be fulfilled. You feel hungry and you eat. You feel thirsty and you drink. And you feel sleepy, you go to bed. Desires are very cunning and complex. You are frustrated not because of needs. You are frustrated because of desires. And if desires take too much of your energy, you will be unable to fulfill your needs also. Because who is there to fulfill them? You are moving into the future. You are thinking of the future. Your mind is dreaming. Who is there to fulfill ordinary needs of the day? You are not there. And you would like to remain hungry, but reach to the horizon. You would like to postpone needs, so that the whole energy moves towards the desire. But in the end you find the desire is not fulfilled. And because needs have been neglected, you are just a ruin in the end. And the time that is lost cannot be regained, you cannot go back. It is said of one old wise man, his name was Mencius. He was a follower of Confucius. He died very, very old. Somebody asked him, if you are given the life again, how you will start it? Said Mencius, I will pay more attention to my needs and less attention to my desires. And this realization will come to you also. But it always comes very late, and life is no more in the hands. If you are given a life again, needs are beautiful, desires are ugly. Needs are bodily, desires are psychological. But look at your so-called saints and sages, they always condemn your needs and always help your desires to be projected. They say, what are you doing? Just eating, sleeping, wasting your life. Try to reach heaven. Heaven is the ultimate desire. The paradise is waiting for you. And you are wasting your life in ordinary things, just vegetating. Stand up and run, because there is not much time left. Reach, knock at the door of heaven. Reach God. But don't stand here. They always condemn your needs. And they always help your desires. That's why the world has become so ugly. Everybody full of desires, and nobody's needs fulfilled. That which can be fulfilled is being neglected, and that which cannot be fulfilled is being fed. This is the misery of man. Chuang Tzu is for needs. Fulfill them, and don't ask for desires. Simply drop the very idea, because there is no future. Only the present exists. And how beautiful it is when you feel hungry, you eat. And there is no future. And you are so much in eating, it becomes a paradise unto itself. That's what Jesus says, don't think of the morrow. Look at the lilies of the field. They don't accumulate. They don't think. They are not worried for the future. They flower here and now. Look at the blooming lilies. The tomorrow will take care of itself. You just be here and now. This moment is enough. Don't ask for more. This is the real sage. One who lives in the moment, for whom this moment is enough, he is fulfilled. There is no heaven for him. He is heaven himself. There is no God for him. He has become divine himself. This will be very difficult, because whatsoever I am saying is against so many centuries of teaching and poisoning. Eat when you feel hungry, and in that moment make eating a celebration. Celebrate, because who knows, next time you may not be there. The hunger may not be there. This beautiful bread may not be there. You may not be there. Thirst may not be there. And this river may not be there. Drink it. Let yourself be here, so much concentrated, that time stops. Because time is not moving, your mind moves. If you are in this moment totally concentrated, enjoying it with your total being, time stops. There is no movement of the time. Then there is no horizon. And no running after it. But everybody is in a hurry to reach the horizon. It happened. Mullah Nasruddin was entered in a hospital. The doctor, the surgeon, who was going to operate, said to him that here, we believe in speed. And we don't waste any time. After the operation, the very first day, you have to walk for 5 minutes in the room. The next day, for half an hour outside the hospital. Third day, a long walk of 1 hour. Here we don't waste time. Life is short, and time is money. It has to be saved. Mullah Nasruddin said, just one question. Do you mind if I lie down for the operation? Everybody is in a hurry. Where are you going in such a hurry? Have you ever seen somebody reaching anywhere? Have you heard that anybody has ever reached anywhere through hurry, through impatience, through speed? We have heard about few people who reached by stopping. But we have never heard about anybody who reached by running. Buddha stopped and reached. Jesus is stopped and reached. Chuang Tzu is stopped and reached. You carry the goal within you. There is nowhere else to go. But the desire leads to distant lands, to distant times, to distant points in space. And the more you are desirous, the more you are in a hurry, you go on missing yourself. Frustrated, tattered, just a ruin before you die. But in that ruin, the desire is still there. You have gathered the whole life experience of desire, and the mind says you failed because you didn't make enough effort. Look, others have succeeded. Look at the neighbors. They have succeeded. You failed because you didn't run fast enough. Next time, be ready. You gather all this attitude in a seed. You are born again, and the whole vicious circle starts. Where are you going? Is there anywhere to go? And even if you reach somewhere, you will be yourself. Even if you are made a president this very moment of this country or some other country, do you think something will change? You will remain the same frustrated being, the same ambitious being, the same tense anguish, the same nightmares. Mulla Nasruddin knocked once at his psychiatrist's office. Said the psychiatrist, "What is the matter now?" Mulla Nasruddin said, "I am having a nightmare and help me. It recurs every night and I cannot sleep. And it has become a heavy burden on my head. Something has to be done now." He was really in trouble. His eyes showed, his whole body, as if he has not slept for many, many months. The psychiatrist became concerned. He said, "Tell me about the nightmare, what it is?" Said Nasruddin that every night I have a dream, horrible dream. The dream is that I am separate with 12 beautiful women. The psychiatrist said, "I don't see the point. What is horrible about it? 12 beautiful women and you are separated with them. What is horrible in it?" Nasruddin said, "Have you ever tried cooing 12 women alone on an island?" "But you are queeing 12,000 women. Every desire is a woman. Your whole life has become a nightmare. So many desires, so many horizons, so many things to be reached before life is lost. That's why you are in such a hurry. You cannot be anywhere. You go on running and running and running, you simply fall into the arms of death. That is the end of your holy first. Remember the first thing, needs are beautiful. And this is the difference between other sages, so-called sages and Chuang Tzu. Needs are beautiful. Desires are ugly. And the distinction is need comes from the body and the desire is created by the mind. Happier are animals, the birds, the trees, because they have got no mind to desire. They are happy wherever they are. They live and they die, but they are never in anguish. The tension is not there. This is the first thing to be remembered, the distinction, a clear-cut distinction between desire and needs. And accept needs. Nothing is wrong in them. And drop desires. Everything is wrong about them. Because they don't allow you to be here and now. And that is the only existence possible. There is no other existence. Bloom like lilies in the field. Sing like birds in the trees. Be wild like wild animals. And don't listen to the poisoners. Enjoy simple bodily needs. How many needs you have got? One needs food. One needs water. One needs a shed. One needs a loving heart. That's all. And if there were not so many desires, the whole world would become a garden of Eden. This very moment, because of desires, we cannot pay attention to simple needs. And look, even animals can fulfill their needs. And man cannot fulfill his needs. Why man is poor? Not because the earth is poor. Just because man is mad. He puts more energy into desires. Reaching to the moon seems to be more important than feeding the poor. What is the use of reaching to the moon? What you will do? But this is the whole trend of the mind. America has wasted so much money in reaching to the moon that the whole Asia can be fed. The whole backward countries could have been developed. And what have you gained? By reaching to the moon. Because the American flag now is on the moon. This is the gain. And there is nobody even to see it. And now other planets are the target. Moon has been conquered now. Other planets have to be conquered. Why this moon madness? Why this lunatic craziness? This word lunatic is very good. It comes from lunar, the moon. A madman is always moon mad. Is struck by the moon. Moon has always been the goal of all the mad people. For the first time they have achieved the goal, they have reached. But what you gain out of it? When you reach to the moon, the goal shifts ahead. The horizon has gone ahead. Now you have to reach another planet and then another planet. Why so much wastage of energy in life? And all the so-called religions go on condemning your needs. This has become their slogan, that not to enjoy is to be religious. Eat, drink and be merry is their condemnation. Whenever they want to condemn anybody, they will say he believes in eat, drink, be merry. But Chantasu says eat, drink and be merry. And if you can be totally in it, you have achieved the Tao. Nothing more is needed. Be simple and allow nature and don't force nature in any direction. And don't become a soldier, a fighter, a warrior with life. Surrender to life and let life happen through you. The first thing. The second thing. Everybody is in search of security. But then you are in search of an impossibility. And whenever you seek impossibility, you meet frustration. It is not possible. It is not the nature of things to be secure. Insecurity is the very soul of life. Insecurity is the very taste. As the sea tastes salty, anywhere you taste it, life tastes insecure. Only death is secure. Life has to be insecure by the very nature of it. Why? Whenever a thing is alive, it is changing. Only a dead thing never changes. Whenever there is change, there is insecurity. What change means? A change means from the known into the unknown. That is this. The base of all insecurity. You want to cling to the known. Look at it in this way. A child is in the womb of the mother. If he wants to be secure, it is better to cling to the womb and don't come out of it. Can you get a more secured situation, a more secured posture than being in the womb forever and ever? There is no responsibility for the child, no worry, no job, no office, no problem to solve. Everything is solved automatically. Even the child has not to breathe on his own. The mother breathes for him. The child's heart beats through the heartbeat of the mother. Mother's blood goes on feeding the child. He is perfectly in heaven. Can you think of a better heaven than womb? Comfortable, asleep. Not even a dream flickers in. A silent sleep. And then comes the birth. And psychologists say that birth is very traumatic because the child is thrown uprooted from his security. A convenient home, the most comfortable. We have not been able to create anything like that. No noise enters, as if the world does not exist at all. The child has not to make any choice and be divided. No training, no conditioning. He simply enjoys himself as if he is the very center of the world. And then suddenly comes the birth. It is traumatic. Insecurity comes into existence for the child for the first time. Now he has to breathe. Now he has to cry when he feels hungry. When he feels thirsty. When he feels uncomfortable. He has to make his own arrangements. He has to start being worried. If the mother is not there, he is worried. He is wet. He cries and cries and nobody listens. Now, tension, insecurity. He is always afraid the mother may leave him. And the mother always goes on threatening that, listen to me, otherwise I will leave you. Even the mothers threaten the child that, listen, follow, otherwise I will die. This is a threat. The child trembles to his very roots. He has to follow. He has to make arrangements. He has to become false. He has to wear masks. He has to play roles. Even if he is not feeling like smiling, the mother comes, he has to smile. He has to become a politician. He has to look how others feel about him. Otherwise he feels insecure. Now, never he will be as secure as the womb. What to do? Should the child cling to the womb? And it seems the child clings. He does not want to come out. Many times, the need of the help of a doctor is needed to bring the child out. His whole being clings, he resists. He wants to be there as he is, the known. And can you think anything more unknown than the world for the child, more stranger? He opens the eyes and everything is strange. The sounds all around. He becomes scared. And now he will grow, and as he grows, more insecurity grows. Sooner or later he will be sent to a school. Now even the home is no more his base. And every child resists. You cannot find a child who is happy to go to the school, unless the home is a hell. No child wants to go to the school. He resists. He clings to the mother, to the house. Because now he is being pushed another birth. From the home he is being thrown out. And then he will start clinging to the school. If you look and go to the university and feel the pulse of the students, nobody wants to leave the university. There are many cases people unconsciously make arrangements to fail again and again. Because university is again security. The father cares. He sends the money. You simply live like a prince. Still the world has not entered, but the whole world is pulling you into insecurity. Sooner or later you have to be thrown out of the university. It is not accidental that all over the world people call university the mother. It is meaningful. It is the mother. You are still a child and the society takes care of you. Then you are moving more and more every day into insecurity. Mother's love was a security. She will love you whether you love her or not. It was one-way traffic. She will love you naturally. But now you will have to seek a woman who will not love you naturally. You will have to love her. If you need love, you will have to give love. With a mother it was different. Everything was taken for granted. But with another woman it is not going to be so. You will have to earn your love with a woman. That's why constant fight. A man wants the wife to be just his mother. But why she should be a mother to him? She is not a mother, she is a wife. And she is in the same situation. She wants the man, the husband, to be her father. What is the meaning of it? A mother's love is unconditional. It is given to you. She says, a father's love is unconditional. Just because you are the child, you are his child, he loves you. There is no need to earn it. But when you move in the world, a husband's love, a wife's love, you have to earn it. And any moment it can be withdrawn. Fear, insecurity. Hence marriage has come into existence. Because lovers are so insecure, they want legal sanction. So the government protects them. The society protects. Otherwise, what is the need of marriage? If love is really there, you need not get married. Why? The fear is there, the love is there today, but who knows about tomorrow? And if love goes, then what you will do? Where you will fall upon? The law, the court, the government, they become the securities. Then you can go to the court. You can demand love. Every society makes divorce as difficult as possible. Marriage as easy as possible. This seems absurd. It should be just the otherwise. Marriage should be made as difficult as possible because two persons are moving in an unknown world. Let them wait, watch, think, brood, meditate. Give them time. To my mind, it seems that at least 3 years' time should be given before the court allows anybody to marry. And I think then nobody will be married. Because 3 years, impossible. After the honeymoon, everything is over. Then people cling because of the law and the security and the problems that will come if they get separated. The children has come. Then marriage becomes a responsibility. Not a bliss, not an ecstasy. And society is always happy if you are not in ecstasy and worried. Because an ecstatic man cannot be exploited. Only a worried man can be exploited. Only a worried man can be made into a slave. An ecstatic man can never be made into a slave. He is too dangerous for the society. He is rebellious. He does not need the society, that is what an ecstatic being means. He is alone enough. And if he doesn't need the society, then the society cannot force things on him. The society wants you to be worried, ill at ease. Then you depend on it. Then you go to the court and you look towards the magistrate as if he is some god. Then the government, the state, the policemen, they all become important because you are worried. If you are ecstatic, lovers can forget them but not married people. Lovers can forget the policeman. He is not needed at all. Their love is enough. But when love goes, then the policeman is needed to keep them united. A policeman is needed. Now he will create trouble if you separate. And just to avoid that trouble, people go on living together. Life is dangerous. But that is the beauty of it. It is insecure. Because insecurity is the very nature of movement, aliveness, vitality. The more dead you are, the more secure. When you will be in your grave, there will be no danger. What can happen to you now anymore? Nothing. Nobody can harm you when you are dead. But when you are alive, you are vulnerable. You can be harmed. But I tell you, that is the beauty of life. A flower in the morning cannot believe that by the evening it will be gone. But that's the beauty of it, that in the morning it is so glorious, so magnificent, an emperor, and by the evening it is gone. Just think of a flower made of a stone or plastic. It remains. It will never fade. But whenever something never fades, it means it never bloomed. Marriage is a plastic flower. Love is a real flower. In the morning it blooms, by the evening it is gone. A marriage continues. It has a permanency about it. In this impermanent world, how anything real can be permanent? Everything real will have to exist moment to moment. And the insecurity is there. Any moment it can disappear. The flower that blooms will fade. The sun that has risen will set. Everything will change. But if you are too much afraid of insecurity, then you will make arrangements. And in those arrangements, you will kill everything. A wife is a dead beloved. A husband is a murdered lover. Then things are settled. Now there is no problem. But then the whole life drags. I am not saying that love cannot be eternal. It can be. But the insecurity is its nature. You cannot make it permanent, remember. You have to move moment to moment. If it fades, you have to accept it. If it goes on blooming, you enjoy it. It depends. But you cannot be secure about it. How can you be secure about the future? Who knows you will be there or not? Even about yourself, you cannot be secure. What about your love? But you go on promising, and you don't know what you are doing. When you love a person, you feel that you will love him forever and ever. This is a feeling of this moment. Don't make it a promise. Just say, this moment I feel that I will love you forever and ever. But I don't know about the next moment how I will feel. Nobody can say anything about the next moment. Nobody can promise. If you promise, you will live in a plastic world. Promise cannot be given. And this is the truth, the honesty of love. It will not promise. Although, everybody wants the promise, just to be secure. And the more afraid you are, the more promise you require. That's why women are more after promises than men. They are more afraid naturally. More insecure they feel. They would like to make everything permanent, only then they will move a step. And then you go on giving false promises. They cannot be fulfilled. Every promise is broken. And with every promise, your heart is broken and others' heart is broken. And with every promise disappearing, life becomes futile and meaningless. The poetry is lost. It becomes a flat prose. A legal phenomenon. You come and make love to your wife, and it becomes a legal thing. You have to do it. It is not a spontaneity. You have to kiss your child. It is not a spontaneity. You have to do it. It is a duty. And duty is the ugliest thing, I tell you. Love is the most beautiful, duty is the ugliest. Love is an unknown phenomena. You cannot manipulate it. Duty is a social byproduct. Then the wife can say, you have to love me, this is your duty. And you promised. And you know that you promised. Then what you can do? If the love has disappeared, or at this moment you don't feel like loving, or this night you don't feel like making love, what to do? Just to keep the promise of the past, you have to be false and acting. So you say, okay, yes, I promised. What you will do? Can you produce love on demand? Is it possible? Has it ever happened? Can you produce love? You cannot. But you can pretend. That pretension will become more and more settled. Because spontaneousness is not allowed. And then everybody feels cheated because a pretended love cannot fulfill. Everybody knows it is pretended, you can see through it. You make all the movements of love, but love is not there. It is just like a yoga exercise. Movements are there, gestures are there, but the heart is not there. You are somewhere else, on duty, on demand, and you also feel that, yes, I promised. And I tell you, that promise may have been absolutely right, but every promise is for the moment. You cannot promise that you will be there tomorrow. How can you promise that your love will be there? You can say only, this is the feeling, this moment, that forever and forever I will love you. But this is a momentary feeling. The next moment, if things disappear, what can I do? But security creates the problem. In everything you need security. That's why everything has become false. Life is insecure. Let this truth penetrate deeper and deeper and deeper in you. Let it become a seed deep inside the heart, that life is insecure, it is its nature, nothing can be done about it, and all that you do will be poisonous. You can only kill. And the more secure you feel, the more dead you will be. Look at people who are really secure, with wealth, prestige, castles around them, and you can see they are dead. Just their faces. The eyes look as if they are made of stone. Their faces look like masks, personas. Their gestures look like automatic. They are not in them. Encaged. But not flowing. Frozen, but not moving. They are not like rivers dancing, running towards the sea. They are dead, dull ponds, not moving anywhere, not flowing anywhere. Every moment you have to face the unknown. This is the insecurity. The past is no more. And the future comes into being, and future is unpredictable. And every moment you are on the door of the unpredictable, this has to be welcomed. The unknown is the guest every moment. In India, we have a very beautiful word for guest. No other language has that type of word. It is Atithi. It means one who comes without giving any previous information, one who comes without giving any date that I am coming. Atithi means without date. He has not a date with you. He simply comes and knocks on the door. But we, who are so much mad and obsessed for security, we have even killed guests. If a guest comes, he has to first inform you, ask your permission that I am coming. Because you have to make room for him. And you have to make arrangements for him. Just suddenly nobody can knock at your door. In the West, the guest has completely disappeared. Even if he comes, he stays in a hotel. The guest is no more there. Because the West is more obsessed with security than the East. Of course, because of that obsession, they have accumulated more wealth, more securities, more bank balances. Everything is insured. But the man is dead. Now no atithi, now no stranger knocks at your door. The unknown has stopped coming to you. Everything has become known. And you move in a vicious circle of the known. From one known, you go to another known. From another known to another. And then you say, why life has got no meaning? Meaning comes from the unknown, from the stranger, from the unpredictable. That suddenly knocks at your door. A flower that suddenly blooms. And you never expect it. A friend that suddenly happens on the street. And you never wait it. A love that blooms suddenly. And you were not even aware that this is going to happen. Not even imagined. Not even a dream. Then life has meaning. Then life has a dance. Then every step is happy. Because it is not a step filled with duty. It is a step moving into the unknown. The river is going towards the sea. Insecurity is the nature of Tao. Don't make securities. Otherwise you are cutting yourself from nature, from Tao. And the more secured you will be, the further away. Move into the unknown. And let the unknown have its own way. Don't force it. Don't push the river. Allow it to flow. And never promise a rose garden to anybody. And when you love, be authentic and true. When you love, be authentic and true. And say that this moment I feel this. Next moment, when the next moment comes, I will tell you. As if this moment is the whole of life. And I tell you, if you are so loving this moment, the other next moment is going to be born out of this moment, you will be more loving. But that is not a promise, not an insurance. If you have loved so totally in this moment, you will love even more totally. It looks absurd because how? Totality can be more, but it happens. Life is absurd. If you have loved totally and authentically and truly and bloomed in this moment, why fear of the next moment? You will bloom. Even if this flower fades, another flower will come. Don't be bothered with this flower. Life goes on blooming into this flower, into that. Sometimes on this tree, sometimes on another. But life continues. Flowers fade. It means forms fade. But the formless goes on moving. Why bother? But you are bothered because this moment you are missing. That's why you are afraid of the next moment. This moment you have not loved. That's why you are making securities for the other moment. This moment you have not lived. That's why you are so scared of the unknown. You are making. And this is a vicious circle. How can you live next moment? You will be there. And with all your habits, patterns, with all dead routines, you will be there. You kill this moment, you will kill another. Forget the future. Live in the present and be so total in it that whatsoever comes out of this totality is going to be a blessing. Whatsoever I say, even if the flower fades, it will be beautiful. Have you really observed a flower fading? It is beautiful. It has a sadness about it. But who told you that sadness is not beautiful? Who says that only laughter is beautiful? I tell you that the laughter is shallow if there is no sadness in it. And the sadness is dead if there is not a smile in it. They are not opposites. They enrich each other. When you laugh with deep sadness, the laughter has a depth. And when your sadness smiles, your sadness has an ecstasy to it. And life is not divided in compartments. Life abhors all compartments. It is your mind who creates airtight compartments. Life is overflowing. It does not know the difference between birth and death. It does not know the difference between blooming and fading. It does not know the difference between a sunset and a sunrise. It moves within these two polarities. These are the two banks, and the river goes on flowing just in between them. Don't be worried about the future. Live this moment so totally that the next moment comes out of it golden. It will take its own care. That's what Jesus says. Don't think of the tomorrow. The tomorrow will take care of itself. You need not be worried about it. Life is insecure, and if you can live in insecurity, that is the only security possible. And the man is happy who can live in insecurity. Because he is the only one who is secure, secure in the arms of life itself. His security is not man-made, his security is that of Tao, that of the ultimate nature itself. Life takes care of you. Why you are so much worried to take care of yourself? Why cut yourself from the life? Why uproot yourself from the life? The life feeds you. The life breathes in you. The life lives in you. Why be so much concerned about yourself? A person who is too much concerned about himself is a householder. A person who is not concerned about himself is a sannyasi. One who says, life takes care of me. This is what I mean by sannyasi. It is not a renunciation of life, it is a renunciation of the ego concern. It is not renouncing life, it is renouncing the worry, the concern, the too much identifiedness, the too much pushing of the river, it is renouncing that. The river moves by itself, you need not push. The river has brought you up to this moment, to this shore. The river will bring you many other sources. Why be worried? Even birds are not worried. Trees are not worried. And man is the most conscious being. Why he should be worried? If the Tao takes care of a rock, if the Tao takes care of a river, if the Tao takes care of a tree, why you doubt that life will not take care of you? And you are the supreme most flowering of life at this moment. Life is bound to take care of you more than anything else. More life is concerned with you, because more is at stake with you. You are a challenge. Life is becoming conscious through you. Life is becoming more and more aware through you. You are reaching a peak. Life is trying to reach a peak through you. Life will take care to allow life and not be concerned with your ego and yourself is renunciation. It is sannyas to me. My sannyas is totally different. It is not the old concept at all. Because the old concept was to leave life, renounce life. And the old concept was just the opposite, to be too much concerned with oneself. You have to take care of yourself. You have to take care about your meditation, yoga. You have to take care about your sadhana. And you have to take care about yourself that you reach God before anybody else reaches. My sannyas is just the opposite. I said, just, you need not worry. You will reach, but you will not reach through worrying. You need not make even the effort. You be effortless. And let your whole life be a let go. And you will reach. But life takes care. In your own hands, you are in dangerous hands. In Tao's hands, you are in the hands of a mother, the ultimate mother. Now, listen to these words. Fishes are born in water. Man is born in Tao. Chuang Tzu says, as fishes are born in water, man is born in Tao. The water takes care. The Tao takes care of you. You are fishes in Tao. The nature. You can call it God. Chuang Tzu never uses that word. Deliberately. Knowingly. Because that word has been so much overloaded with nonsense. Overloaded with nonsense. He simply uses Tao, a more neutral word. Vedas also use Rit. Rit means Tao, the nature. Man is born in Tao. That's why we cannot feel it. Fishes cannot feel water. They have known it so deeply. They have been born in it. They have lived with it so much. There has never been a separation. The fishes never know what water is. They move in it. They live in it. They die in it. They come and disappear in it. But they don't know what water is. It is said that once a young fish became very much worried because she had heard so much about the ocean and she wanted to know what ocean is. She went from one wise fish to another wise fish. She searched for a master, a guru. There were many, because fishes have their own masters and gurus. They said many things, because when you go to a guru, even if he does not know, he has to say, just to save his gurudom. They said many things about the ocean. But the fish was not satisfied, because she wanted a taste of it. The guru said it is very far away. It is difficult to reach. Only rarely somebody reaches to the ocean. And don't be foolish. Millions of life one has to prepare for it. It is not an ordinary thing. It is a great task. First purify yourself. And do these astang, eightfold path of Patanjali. Somebody was a Buddhist. He said, this won't help. You move on the path of Buddha. The eight disciplines of Buddha will help. First, become purified absolutely. No impurity. And only then you will be allowed to see the ocean. And somebody said, in this Kali Yuga, only the chanting of the name of Ram will help. Chant Ram, Ram, Ram. Only by His grace one reaches. And the fish was always in the ocean. She searched and searched, consulted many scriptures, consulted many doctrines, doctrinaires, doctors, visited many ashramas, but reaching nowhere, got more and more frustrated. Where is the ocean? It became an obsession. And then one day, one fish, very ordinary, must have been like Chuantas. Just ordinary, nobody ever thought that this fish can be a guru. Just living an ordinary fish life. That fish said, don't get mad. Don't be foolish. You are already in the ocean. What you see around is the ocean. It is not very distant. It is so near, that's why we cannot see it. Because to see a thing, a distance is needed. To have a perspective, a space is needed. It is so near, we cannot see it. It is out of you, it is within you. You are nothing but a wave in the ocean. A part of it. A concentration of its energy. But the seeker didn't believe. The seeker said, you seem to be gone mad. I have visited so many masters and they all say it is very distant. And first one has to purify, do yogasanas, cultivate discipline, character, moral, be religious, go through many rituals, and then in millions of lives, it happens, and that too through the grace of God, that one reaches to the ocean. But Chuang Tzu is true, the ocean is all around you. You are in it. You cannot be otherwise. How can you live if God is not breathing in you? Who is breathing in you? Who moves into your blood? Who digests your food? Who dreams distant dreams in you? Who gives birth to poetry and love? Who beats in your heart with the steps of the unknown? Who is the music of your life? How it can be possible that God is distant? If God is distant and far away, how you can be here? How can you exist? It is not possible, because God is life. And you are a crystallization of life itself. You are God, maybe miniatures. But you are gods. And I don't say that someday in the future you will be like gods. I say here, this very moment, you know or you know not, it makes no difference. You are gods. Because otherwise is not possible. It may take millions of lives to realize this, but not because the distance was vast, but because you behaved foolishly. Not because you were impure, but because you were ignorant. No discipline is needed except awareness. Just becoming aware of the near and the close. Just becoming aware of that which is already touching your skin. That which is throbbing in the heart. That which is flowing into your blood stream. Just becoming aware of the close and the near. And to come to the close, you have to live in the moment, because if you move in the future, you have gone distant. Then you are on a far journey, and God is here. You have already left Him behind. Says Chuang Tzu, fishes are born in water, man is born in Tao. If fishes born in water seek the deep shadow of pond and pool, all their needs are satisfied. Needs, desires, no. If a fish becomes a politician, no. But they are not so foolish to become politicians. Fishes are not so foolish as men. They simply live. They enjoy. They eat, drink and be merry. They dance. They are so grateful for the little spawn that has been given to them. They delight in it. Look at the fishes in a pond, jumping, delighting, running hither and thither. It seems there is no goal for them. No ambition. Their needs are fulfilled. When they are tired, they move in the shadow, in pond and pool, they rest. When energy comes again, they move and dance and float and swim. When they are tired again, they move into the shadow and rest. Their life is the rhythm between rest and action. You have lost the rhythm. You act, but there is no rest. You go to the shop, but you never come back home. Even if you come, the shop comes in the hedge. You never seek a shadow in the pond, in the pool. That is what all meditation is. Just to seek the pond, the shadow. That's all what prayer is. To move from activity into inactivity. That's what all religion is about. Action. You have moved too much. You have lost the balance. Now be inactive so the balance is regained. Be active. But don't forget that inactivity is needed as much as action. Because the action is to move into the world, inactivity is to move within words. It is just like a rhythm of anything else. In the day you are awake, in the night you sleep. It is a rhythm. In the day you are conscious, in the night you become unconscious. You eat and then you have to fast for few hours. Then again hunger comes and you eat, and then again you have to fast for few hours. If you simply go on eating, you will go mad. If you simply go on fasting, you will be dead. A rhythm is needed. A rhythm of the opposites is the most secret key of life. Always remember the opposite. But the mind says, why the opposite? What is the need? Because why be contradictory? If you can be awake, then be awake. Why go to sleep? There are few scientists who go on thinking that if we can save man from sleep, then much more life will be saved. They say because if you are going to live 90 years, 30 years will be lost into sleep. Too much waste. Scientists are more wise than Tao. Too much waste. And your mind will also say, yes, if 30 years can be saved, life will be enriched much more. And I tell you, you will become just mad if your 30 years of sleep is cut. You may be awake 90 years, but you will be maniacs. Just think of a man who has not slept for 90 years. The world will be a nightmare. It will be impossible to live with such a man. Because he will never relax. He will be tense and tense and tense. The whole world will become a madhouse. It is already. A rhythm is needed. You have to be awake. And you have to move into sleep. And sleep is not opposite in life, it is opposite only in logic. Because when you sleep deeply, you become capable of more activity and more awareness in the morning. If you had slept the last night beautifully, deeply, you enjoyed it, you relaxed completely into it, you forget yourself totally, then in the morning you arise completely reborn, fresh, full of energy to move into action again. And if you have been acting the whole day with tremendous energy, not lukewarm, really active, then you will have a better sleep again. Action done totally brings relaxation. Relaxation done totally brings more action. Life is enriched through the opposites. But the logic says, because logic believes that opposites never meet, and because of the logical thinking, the whole West has gone imbalanced. It always goes on cutting. It says, because you enjoy only when you are wakeful. In sleep, there is no enjoyment. So go on pushing your wakefulness deep into the night. So in the West, they go to sleep. The half the night is passed because dancing, eating, meeting friends, discussing, arguing, gossiping, clubs, hotels, theaters. As much as you can be awake and push wakefulness deep into the night. And they push it too much that when they go to their bed, they go always half-heartedly, because it seems if it was possible to be awake the whole night, they would have enjoyed more. Few dances more. They could have visited one more theater, few friends, or they would have accumulated more money, or gambled a little more. Always They go half-hearted and then they complain that there is insomnia. We cannot sleep. Deep down you don't want to sleep. I have never seen an insomniac who really wants to sleep. If he wants, sleep will be there. He does not want. Deep down he wants a life active, completely active, no rest. Because through rest you cannot earn money. That's the problem. And through rest you cannot win elections. Through rest the shop will not go become bigger. Through rest what you can achieve? Rest cannot achieve ambition. Ambition needs action. Desires need action. Politics, money, everything needs action. Sleep is a sheer wastage. If your mind is obsessed with desires, you go half-hearted to the world, as if it is a compulsion. And then you feel you cannot sleep. Half-hearted, you create resistance. And then you have moved too much into desire, action, that they continue in the mind. The body wants to go to sleep, but the mind continues being active. Just the other day, a man came and he said, when I meditate, thoughts continue. How to stop them? So I told him how to. And then he said, but I love thinking. Now why? Then why try to stop them? So he says, because of those thoughts I cannot go to sleep and I cannot relax. But still I love thinking. This is the problem. You love thinking because thinking can become instrumental to achieve something. You can become a great thinker. Or you can become a great leader. Through thinking only, through sleeping, have you ever heard anybody becoming a great leader? They all condemn sleep. They all condemn laziness. They all condemn people who simply enjoy life and not too much active. They call them hobos or bums, vagabonds. They are condemned. But have you ever observed the fact that the world has never suffered from any lazy man? Because no lazy man can become a Hitler. No lazy man can become a Nixon. No lazy man can become a Mao, Genghis Khan, Napoleon. No lazy man can become active. Action has brought all the wars. Action is the most mischievous thing in the world. But still we go on saying that action is needed because everybody is ambitious. If you drop ambition, you will become lazy and active in proportion. Then your life will be a rhythm. You will move to this and then you will move to the other. And inside you will balance yourself. In the day, be active. In the night, sleep. Action and meditation should be together. That's why I never suggest to anybody to move to the Himalayas and renounce the world. Because then you will be simply lazy and sleeping. Again, imbalance. Be in the world. But when you come to your home, really come to your home. Leave the office. Leave it behind. Don't carry the files in the head. When you are inactive, enjoy inactivity. And when you are active, enjoy activity. And let the body feel and move according to Tao, not according to your mind. If fishes born in water seek the deep shadow of pond and pool, all their needs are satisfied. If man born in Tao sinks into the deep shadow of non-action, to forget aggression and concern, he lacks nothing and his life is secure. Deep down within you are the roots. You are like a tree. Half of the tree is open on the earth. Half of the tree is deep hidden in the earth, in the darkness of the earth. And there are the roots. Flowers flower. You can see them. But they flower because of the roots. You cannot see them. Invisible are the roots. Visible are the flowers. Let your actions be your flowers, visible. But your inaction, your root, the invisible. And keep a balance. Higher the tree goes into the sky, deeper the roots have to reach. Small trees can have small roots. Big trees will have big roots. And it is always proportionate. If the tree goes 50 feet high, the roots go 50 feet down. And the same should be for you. Move into action, but then move into inaction. Every day, make it a rhythm, a harmony. If man born in Tao sinks into the deep shadow of non-action to forget aggression and concern, he lacks nothing and his life is secure. In inactivity, you dissolve into the ocean. The fish becomes the ocean. In sleep, who you are? The ego is no more there. The fish has dissolved. In deep sleep, where are you? You don't occupy any space. You have become one with existence. The same happens in deep meditation. Hindus have said that deep meditation is just like deep sleep, only with one difference, that you are alert in meditation and not alert in sleep. In deep meditation, when you seek the cool shadow, you are alert, inactive but conscious. You know where you are moving. You know that the whole being is settling. You know, as if a leaf, dead leaf, falls from the tree, moves towards the earth, floats a little in the wind, then by and by settles on the earth and falls into deep sleep. When you move towards meditation from the world of activity, you are falling like a dead leaf or a feather of a world. There will be few shakings, waverings on the breeze. Here and there you will move, and by the deeper you go, then you settle on the earth. You have reached to the root. Then everything settles. Then there is no worry, no thought, no world, no you. Only that which is remains. That is Tao. Enriched, rejuvenated, you come back to the world. And by it becomes so easy as coming out of your house and going in. It becomes so easy. When you want to be active, and remember, this activity should follow your bodily need, not your mental desire. You become active when energy is flowing. And you feel the energy has to be used, because energy needs action. Energy delights in action. If you cannot do anything, at least dance. And remember, energy needs action. If you suppress energy, then you will become aggressive. Don't suppress energy, and this is one of the deepest problems for the modern man. Because the primitive man needed much energy for his day-to-day life, going for a hunt. Much energy was needed. 8 hours running in the forest, fighting with animals, then by the end of the evening, and that too was not certain, you may be able to get your food. Much energy was needed for ordinary day-to-day affairs. Now, everything is done by machines. Technology has relieved you of much work. What to do? You become aggressive. You fight. You become angry. Without any reason and rhyme, you become angry. Suddenly you flare up. Everybody knows that this is foolish. Even you, in your cooler moments, know that that was foolish. But why? You flared up unnecessarily. The excuse was not enough. The real reason is not that there was some situation. The real reason is you have so much energy, so much petrol overflowing, inflammable. Any moment, it has to be active. That's why after anger you feel relaxed. After anger you feel a little well-being coming to you. For the modern man this is going to be so, that's why I insist on active meditations, not on silent meditations. Because your energy needs acting out. It needs catharsis. You have too much energy. No action for the energy, and rich food is available. Food creates more energy. It is a fuel. This age is the most well-fed age in the whole of history. And no work. Or, even if you go to the office or the shop or somewhere, the work is mental, not physical. Mental work is not enough. Man is physically a hunter. He needs much activity to be relaxed. So choose, but according to your bodily needs. Don't force the body. Don't compel it. Just feel your body, what it needs. If it needs action, then go for a run, go for a swimming, go for a long walk, or if you cannot do anything, dance. Meditate and be active. Let the energy flow. You melt into existence through action. And when the energy is gone, and you delighted, relaxed, then be silent. Find a cool spot in the pond and relax there. Action also can lead you to the Tao. Inaction can also lead you to the Tao, because there is nothing else than Tao. If you become aware, through action also you meet Him. That is pouring your energy into the Tao, action. And in inaction, Tao pours its energy back into you. Look, this is like this. The river flows to the ocean, pours itself into the ocean. This is action. Then the ocean becomes clouds, moves towards the Himalayas, pours down in rains, again fills the river, This is in action. Now the river is not doing anything. Now the ocean is doing something. In action you give, in inaction you receive. And a balance is needed. And the more you give, the more you will receive, because the emptier you will be to receive. A small river will receive small, a big river will receive big. When Ganges pours herself down into the ocean has to return back the same Ganges. Again and again it goes. In action you share, you give, you overflow. Be delighted. Be happy. Be dancing while you give. And then in an action, the Tao pours in you. And if you go dancing, the Tao also comes dancing. God always comes to you the same way you go to Him. If when you sit silently you feel sad, that means in action you were not happy. You gave, but you gave grudgingly. If you did really happily, when you will feel silent and sit silent, you will feel so much bliss. But it will depend. And remember this, people come to me, they say, if we sit silently, everything becomes sad and we feel very depressed. That shows that when you are giving, you give grudgingly. You don't give wholeheartedly. God comes to you the same way you go to Him. And there cannot be anything else. Because God is just the returning. If you reach Him dancing, He reaches you dancing. If you are acting as if you are a martyr, you go to the office and say it because of the duty. The wife is there and children are there and I have to. And I am waiting just to get retired. When to get retired? Then God will come the same way to you. It will be a duty for Him to knock at your door. He will say, I have to. Then He will come crucified. But if you go dancing in your life, He will come with a flute. Remember this, that God is a response. It is a resounding of your being. If you go to the hills, and you say something, the hills resound it. The whole existence resounds you. Whatsoever you do will be returned to you. This is the law of karma. It is not a question of details. That you have insulted somebody, so the same man is going to insult you in some life. Don't be foolish. Don't be silly. But the law is exactly right. It says, whatsoever you give, you will receive. Whatsoever you sow, you will reap. God comes to you the way you reach. Enough?